school. Okay, this is the public board meeting of the Oregon Board of Accountancy, December 6th. We're reconvening after the executive session. It is 9:40 a.m. We will go around the room and state our names, declare who's in the room. This is Nancy Young Oliver, board chair.
Scott Wright, board member.
Joe Sullivan, board member.
Jason Robinson, board member.
Joel Parks, board staff.
Stuart Morris, board vice chair.
Deanna Franco, public member.
Anthony Strong, board staff.
Kimberly Fass, executive director.
Angie Hunt, board legal counsel.
Julie Nadeau, board staff.
Lindsay Davis, real estate services.
Great, thank you. We're going to go ahead and jump forward in our agenda right now to item 14E and discuss the office lease. Kimberly?
So, I have to find a supplement out here that I wrote because I need to find it. Please send it to Kristen. Thank you. Okay. So, in, what was it, late October, mid-October, I received a phone call from Liz's office asking about extending our current lease for another 2 years, which is always our option. And we got to chatting about that, if that was something that we wanted to look into new space. And I hadn't, we think about it always in the back of our head, but I hadn't put it on the front burner. But anyway, it turned out that I showed interest in having a new space. Liz took both Julie and I on a tour of seven different properties. We have honed it down to one, and it's on the second page here. You'll see that what our current location is, with, including the square footage and the price per square feet, and what we pay. We actually chose Park 5 at this point. We don't know what the full rent will be yet. Julie and I met with the
property manager, the broker, and the contractor.
Yes, yesterday, and went through some of the improvements that we want to make to the space. This space will include our own conference room, a breakout center for smaller meetings. It has a full kitchen, space for all the staff, and it's secure. I'm sure if you read my memo, all the kind of benefits. Right now, when you come to our office, you walk in and you're in our office. And this way, there's the front door, and there'll be a second security door, so people just can't come into our office space. There is going to be a cost savings, at least somewhat. We just don't have those numbers yet.
We're not done with the negotiations. My goal was to try to negotiate all of the tenant improvements to make the space very, very nice. I'm trying to negotiate that to where the landlord will pay for that, or as much as we can get them to pay for that. As of now, they're saying it's looking pretty good, but you know, we're asking for some walls and windows and things like that. So right now, the rent is quite a bit less than what you're paying now, but we've got to figure in those tenant improvements. Where that, my goal is to keep the rent where you're at per square foot or less. Because you're increasing your square footage. So we're still in a little bit of flux right now. It won't be more, but definitely. It's just how do we slice the pie?
And have we told our landlords here that we're not going forward with them?
So we met with the other directors to let them know. There was concern that if we leave, we're going to increase their rate. We determined that is not the case. It used to be because we weren't separated. It was so much open space, but now since we have our own little space, I don't think we've talked to...
I have.
Okay.
Because I had to give notice by the end of November of your intent. And so I gave the...
Oh, that's right, he knows.
Yeah. I gave the notice for everybody else and then had a conversation with them around that what your desires are. They're not confirmed, but we do have that desire. And they said they were sad to see you go, but they'll do whatever.
Yeah. So with that being stated, it's happening one way or the other?
Not necessarily. Okay. If we decide to back out, we can. They're very open to letting us stay if that's what we want to do. We just have not exercised our right to renew, but they're open to it.
The goal is May 1st. The goal isn't May 1st, but it may be May 31st, right? Is that my understanding?
If I remember correctly, your expiration date is May 31st.
Right.
But we have 2 months of holdover.
That's right.
So we have actually till July 31st is the drop dead date. But if we're shooting for May 31st.
How would that play with renewal season?
Yeah, that's why we're shooting for May 1st. Right?
That's correct. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, we're, yeah.
Right.
Okay.
Don't think that didn't go along with us. Yeah.
But you're looking at 200 less square feet. Is that what that says here?
No.
Because it says present location is 3,203 feet, and Park 5 is 3,060 feet.
So the square footage at Pringle, that 3,200, mm-hmm. is including common space. And at Park 5, this is all of our space.
But but he is correct in the fact that that is how much you're paying rent on.
Yes,
it's
so
true.
That is correct.
But physically, we'll actually have more usable space on
just
the new place
yeah.
versus what your current configuration.
Correct. Yes. About 1,000 square feet more.
Mm-hmm. Really? Okay. That's what I was interested in.
Yes.
It looked like you were thinking.
That 3,200 includes the shared conference rooms and our portion of hallways, restrooms, all of it. Whereas everything is self-contained in our unit.
Okay. So you truly picked up some space.
Yeah. And room for growth if we need it.
Because how much is the common space that we're paying for here?
Your common space here is, gosh, about 1,200, 1,300 square feet.
It's
quite
lot.
A bit.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be
it's
quite a substantial change for us.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Cool.
Oh, and Julie, so we got the layout yesterday. Yeah, if you guys just kind of want to.
it's really nice.
Yes,
it will be really nice.
Yes, they tried to make us share bathrooms with the boys, and we said no. So
boys' bathroom, girls' bathroom.
Yes,
got it.
Yeah, no shares.
That's exciting.
It's gonna be nice. It's a good location. It's off of Hawthorne, so if you're coming here and you're going by Costco, you just take a right, depending on which direction you're going, I guess, yeah, right. And we're just right off the highway, basically. Lots of hotels on that street, so.
So if we have to do the all-nighter, guys,
yeah.
someplace for us to stay.
board members that drive from
yeah.
farther away.
Yeah.
Hi, Shay.
Okay. Okay. Well,
and I've checked with the accountant. We have the funds.
Great.
That's not a concern. We're working with a designer from DAS too, and he's also serving as like a project manager, so he'll be dealing with the scheduling movers and scheduling the data and the IT stuff and whatever
yeah.
else goes into all of this.
He'll plan and prepare
mm-hmm.
everything for you.
Yeah.
He and I are a team. We're all
And they have not been. And they have been unbelievable to work with. I mean, just
wow.
big thumbs up. It's
nice.
Been a really good experience.
Thank you.
So, yeah, it's been really cool. So.
Awesome.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you very much.
I have a party. A welcome
does
party.
Anybody have any questions before we?
Free parking?
Yes.
Yes. Lots of free parking.
Yes, lots of free parking.
I like that. Awesome.
Yeah.
And there is also mass transit right outside. Right.
That's true.
Point.
Yeah, you're right.
Oh, from Portland?
Can you make that happen?
Come down here,
can I make that happen? Yeah, I'll just go back to work and make that happen. All right.
Anything else from
now?
Thank you so much for having us.
Welcome
thank you.
So much.
We'll talk soon.
See you later.
Thank
bye.
You.
Bye.
Okay, I'm going to move us back to item 5 on our public meeting agenda. So the consent agenda recommends disclosure of reporting inquiries, and we have none on that.
I make a motion to approve the consent agenda with regard to closing inquiries.
Second.
I'll second.
Great. Is there any further discussion on that? All in favor state aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
All right, motion passed. We have no other...
Well, yeah. I think this would be the time to talk about the case that we did have.
Yes, we do have one, yeah. So that's...
In the matter of agency case number 18-028, I make a motion for a finding of insufficient evidence for a violation of one or more rules or statutes regarding public accounting.
Second.
Any further discussion? All in favor state aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Any abstentions?
Deanna Franco has abstained.
Great. Okay, consideration of the settlement proposals.
Do we want to get them presented or just go right to motions?
Yeah. Okay, so for case 18-008, Ralph Stromberger, Perry McMillan Miller, the settlement agreement calls for $3,000 in civil penalties and $2,000 in costs, $1,500 of the civil penalty and the $2,000 in costs are saved, and so that leaves $1,500 of civil penalty due. We did verify with the ASCPA and Mr. Stromberger that he is compliant, in compliance with the ASCPA's terms.
I make a motion in the matter of agency case number 18-008, in the matter of Ralph Stromberger and Perrin McMillan and Miller, to accept the settlement and agreement and stipulated final order as presented.
I'll second it.
So. This will come up on multiple, but I note in paragraph 20, under, would be on page 4, it says that paragraph 21, should he ever violate anything else, all of the fees or stayed costs become due and payable.
I'm sorry, I didn't know what you were asking.
Well, it's a statement. Okay. So in paragraph 21, we say that forever, should he ever make a violation and found, then everything that was stayed will be unstayed. Yet we're going to be dealing with some other cases that have limitations on that period. Was that?
That was just a negotiation piece.
Okay. So it is, the way this one is written, it is, should he ever violate it, the stayed costs and penalties could be assessed. Okay, thank you.
Any further discussion? All in favor state aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion carried.
Case 18-024, Martin Kaminsky. The civil penalty calls, the settlement calls for $1,000 in civil penalties and $2,000 in costs, $500 of the civil penalty, and all the costs are stayed, which leaves $500 in civil penalties.
In matter of agency case number 18-024, with respect to Martin Kaminsky, I make a motion to accept the settlement agreement and stipulated final order as presented.
I'll second it.
Any further discussion? All in favor state aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
For case 18-027, Christopher Ferentz, the settlement agreement calls for $38,900 in civil penalties and $2,000 in costs. All but $5,000 of the civil penalty is stayed and $2,000 costs are stayed. And Mr. Ferentz also agrees to be in compliance with board statutes and rules until July 1st, 2024.
In the matter of agency case number 18-027, regarding Christopher Farron, I make a motion to accept the settlement agreement and stipulated final order as presented.
I'll second it.
Further discussion?
So in paragraph 15A, where it starts to describe his payment plan, it says respondent agrees to make 10 payments of $500 each to the board by starting date December 26, 2020. Are they intended to be monthly? There's no... Just as long as he makes 10 payments of $500?
Yeah, I asked that same question, but he, I think he wants the flexibility of...
Okay.
Right, that's what they requested.
Because the next one says, all payments shall be postmarked by the 15th of every month, beginning on December of 19. So, and then there's 12-month period and 10 payments. So in theory, you can pay all 10 payments the day before they're due. Is that correct?
Yeah, but we're not opening this up that he can make one payment of $500 and then 10 years down the road, there's
no... No, there is an ultimate payment date on it. Yeah.
Okay.
I read it as there is an ultimate payment date on it.
Right. Any further discussion? All those in favor state aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
So in case 19-002, Kevin Briard and Briard and Associates, the settlement agreement calls for $1,000 in civil penalties and $2,000 in costs. All of the costs are stayed, and $1,000 in civil penalties are due.
In matter of agency case 19-002, regarding Kevin Briard and Briard and Associates, I make a motion to accept the settlement agreement and stipulated final order as presented.
I'll second it.
Any further discussion? All in favor state aye.
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 Those opposed? Okay. Motion passed.
So in case 19-019, Herbert...
017.
Herbert Stratton Miller, LLC, DBA, DTA, CPAs. The settlement agreement requires that they apply and be admitted to the municipal roster. There's $5,500 in civil penalties and $2,000 in costs. The costs are stayed, and all the civil penalties are due, and they also agreed to provide a copy of the settlement agreement to their Oregon clients and peer reviewer, and they agreed to be in compliance with board statutes and rules for 5 years.
In the matter of agency case 19-017, regarding the matters of H. Brent Stratton and Stratton and Miller LLC, DBA B2A CPAs, I make a motion to accept the settlement agreement and stipulated final order as presented.
I'll second it.
Any further discussion?
In paragraph 16, they were to submit their municipal roster application by November 30th, 2019. Did they do that?
They submitted, I think, two of them approved.
Correct.
And then the other question would be is, so the case had to do with June of 18 jobs, June of 18. How about Oregon clients for June of 19? Do we know if they issued any reports before they got admitted to the roster on the 30th or whenever we approved their admittance to the roster?
Have they issued them yet?
Well, that's, what do we know, do they have any June 30, 19 jobs that they are working on or have completed or anything else? Because all the investigation was June of 18 that we were dealing with.
As far as we know, they entered into a five-year contract with those two clients.
Okay.
And so we understand that not.
We do not know necessarily that they took on any new clients, but they certainly would be recurring with that.
And if they have issued for 19, we've... gotten notification.
The Secretary of State, in theory, would kick them back as being not in the roster.
Well, but let's pause for a minute on that, because if they are doing work right now and they are not on the roster, that's a problem. So if they're doing governmental audits, which the general, I mean, you can go past December 31st, but generally you look to issue a report no later than December 31st, especially if you're receiving any level of federal funding, which has some other, you know, deadlines due to it. So I mean, it's a valid point. What we're looking at right now is a order based on the 18 work that they did. And it brings up a good comment, is that basically we've got these clients, we've got a contract for 5 years, we're doing the work, so give me my muni license. Mm-hmm. So is there any, is this order taking into consideration the fact that they are actively working on other clients?
So if you look at item 15, it says that respondents agree that prior to bidding, contracting, performing, or issuing board and municipal audits, they would be in compliance with OAR 801-0202-0620-4, which requires them to get a new license.
Before they do any work. Okay, so we need to put a follow-up on this.
Well, we're good. But the problem, I guess, is if they've got a five-year contract, they probably are, even before they entered into this agreement, they were probably working on it at that point. Mm-hmm. And we have in our packet the ratification of their admittance to the roster. Should we ratify their admittance to the roster before we accept this settlement agreement? Because in the meantime, they've done work that's not under the roster.
Well, they did. That's why the whole complaint came out.
But it's a continuing violation, though.
But
so I'm just,
regardless of when it's approved, if they're doing work on those plans right now, it's a violation.
Yes.
So I don't think that the order matters on this settlement proposal. It just doesn't address the fact that they're currently doing. Our settlement proposal doesn't necessarily, I don't know.
We don't know.
So we'll see. That's my comment is that, well, we'll see. If we approve them on the roster today and tomorrow, they submit a municipal audit, then they were in violation of what they said they were going to enter into. So.
With that stated, I would be comfortable grandfathering in their prior work. If we're reaching a settlement with them now, I really wouldn't want to approve this settlement agreement and then start another investigation because they violated their settlement agreement. That just seems wrong.
I agree with you on that, but I guess then can we just like pause on the settlement agreement? Can we get just a little bit more information on that, Kimberly? Because if that's the case, and they're out there actively working, and to address Scott's comment of grandfathering, can we get clarification from the firm about what they're actively doing, or are they waiting? You know, where's their engagement letter for this year? Have they entered into an engagement letter? And if that's the case, then I think that the stipulation agreement should be language added to address what they're doing in 19. Because Scott's right, it does feel like and we shouldn't do that. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Is that an option?
Yeah. Can we just pause on this one and come back to it?
Yes.
Well, we have a motion on the table.
Right,
second, so
let's withdraw the motion. And
I make a motion to withdraw my motion. So whoever seconds would.
I'll withdraw my second.
Okay.
Okay.
And then we'll just. I want to talk to Anthony really quick, and then.
Okay. Okay. So
can
we keep going?
Yes.
Okay. So let's move on to item.
Just remember that we need to come back to this.
Okay. All right. I got it. Okay. Item 7: Review of the Public Board Summary. October 24th.
Kimberly, is this you? Oh, this is just the summary from the board meeting, so it's just for your information. If anything changes or comments, I'm happy to hear them.
Anybody have any comments? All right, we'll move on to the report of the OSCPA.
Thank you very much, Sherry McPherson, OSCPA staff. So I want to thank the board for Nancy and Kimberly's presentation at this last Tuesday's professional issues update. It's very much appreciated having you there, giving an update on the board activities, particularly in light of the new proposed goal changes. So thank you for that. I had a comment or two that was very much appreciated. And coming up, we have a number of just more, let's call them internal things. We're starting up the new year. We're working on ethics in anticipation of changes to the rules and that sort of thing. And we have the new schedule coming up. We're looking at a variety of things. One of the things that we want to make sure is that there's adequate outreach around the state. So this year, we'll have about 90 of our regular seminars where people would be studying in classrooms themselves, also webcast around the state too. So in addition, we work with a lot of national vendor partners, so we try to be very in tune with NASPA's fields of study and rules and funding, state run standards for CPE and that sort of thing. So thank you for that, and that was really my primary point, was to express that appreciation, because I know having the board talk about those rules changes as opposed to, you know, only OSCPA, very, very helpful. So thank you for that, and happy holidays to everybody.
All right, report of the OAIA.
Thank you. I'm Amanda Phillips from the OAIA. For us, it's also CPD season, prepping up for the upcoming tax season. We have three seminars coming up. Next week, we have our 1040 seminar, two-day seminar, Thursday, Friday. January 10th, we have a state and federal update. And then we have a new seminar that we're trying out this year. It's a 1040 boot camp designed for newer staff. It kind of goes over some more of the fundamentals in the middle of January on the 15th.
Great. Thank you, and thank you for joining us today. All right, report of the chair. That would be. Let's see. The one thing that I will share is that I've been asked to speak at the OSCPA's governmental winter conference, and so I'll be working with Kimberly and Angela on what I can say. And the essence of that is basically, what are the matters that we deal with in the process, and then some of those cases where, you know, we're not going to share any names, but to help folks understand the types of complaints that we deal with and what the consequences are to that, to help them, you know, better understand our role in protecting the public. And that is coming up. Was that February? When am I doing that? February. The OSCPA governmental winter. Is it February? Or January?
It's in late January.
January.
I can look up the date.
That's okay. It's late January. It will be riveting. So, yes. Okay.
Get your tickets now.
Yeah, get your, there you go.
That would have been great to go to before I signed up for this.
Yeah. So, so I'll be doing that, but speaking as the board chair at that conference. I'm not only speaking at those conferences, you know, from the forensic side of it, but this will be different. So, okay, report of the vice chair.
I'll save my comments till the qualifications committee.
Okay, sounds good. Report of treasurer.
So on the agenda it says September, but we actually got October's. So you should have that in your handout today. Everything's looking good. Not a lot to report. Let's see. Yeah, if you have any questions on anything that you see here, I will do my best to answer it.
So just a comment on the AG legal fees.
Yes, ma'am.
That is, so we get that periodically, but a bigger hit in October than what it normally is. Just so everybody understands what that is.
So we're on a flat rate fee schedule with them. The 112, let me see. I wonder if there was, did we get?
Is that two payments?
That's what I'm wondering.
That's what I'm wondering, yeah. Too.
It looks like it probably is exactly that. I'd have to go back in there, but most, we pay our fee quarterly.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm thinking this probably ran into like a month 13 sort of thing, and then
there's nothing under July actuals, which our first payment would have been due in July.
So that's cool. The assumption. I can double check that for you.
Okay. But overall, it looks like on that line item, our projection is to be under.
We just are a few months in, though.
No. All right. But we can be hopeful. So.
Yes, we can.
Okay.
But there is space for Angie to camp out at our new space, should we get that.
New home for Angie.
So if I'm reading this correctly, it appears that from the beginning of our fiscal biennium, we're actually going to see a small decrease in cash of about $100,000. starting at $2,231, upper left-hand corner, where June of 21, $2,138. So it is a somewhat small reduction in the cash position, but in the ending cash balance
at
June. Yeah. Your ending cash balance would be at the bottom. There's a grayed area, mm-hmm. which I'm comfortable with, because we've had concerns that we may be accumulating more than we really need, but if we are starting to do a little bit of burn down in cash, it's not worrisome, but I just want to make sure I'm understanding what's presented.
I did not provide a written like I usually do, but I have stuff. I still have things to tell you. First and foremost, the good news is that we have successfully hired our new investigator position. His name is Jeremiah Leppert, L-E-P-P-E-R-T, Leppert. He will be joining us on December 18th. I asked him to attend this meeting, but he had other obligations, so we'll have to wait to see him later. He has really great experience in audit and tax. He's worked for several local Salem firms. He is not only a CPA, he's also a media auditor, and he has the CFE as well. So I think he'll be a great fit for our team, and we're looking forward to working with him.
Do we anticipate, I mean, right off the bat, we're going to get him into investigations, or what's the transition period for him?
Anthony was, we were talking a little bit about it yesterday, about doing some straight-to-board cases, perhaps, get his feet wet a little bit. Generally, when we hire with the state, there's a six-month trial period, and with this position, we have extended that to a 12-month trial period just to... 6 months, an investigator may not even have the full report in the investigation completed. And so this will allow him to not only get some investigations under his feet, but also attend BOAC meetings and board meetings before really making that final jump to permanent position. Let's see what else. We talked about the move already, so that's another exciting thing going on. We are in the middle of firm renewals. They're coming in pretty steadily. They're going to start ramping up here in the next couple weeks because they're due by the end of this month. We'll see how that all works out. Let's see what else. Okay, anything? It's been pretty quiet, but busy. I think so.
There's one thing I forgot to mention. So, and I believe by our next one, our next board meeting will be talking about the executive director annual evaluation. Scott, I need to talk to you a little bit about how questions were formulated last year.
Although we probably, you and I can't talk, so we probably have to go into executive session.
Oh, no. Okay,
true.
Yeah.
So, I guess. I'm not sure how you guys came up with the questions.
Can we do it in executive session for personnel? To consider personnel matters?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, we can do that. Okay. We'll do that.
Yeah.
Okay. We'll get through the rest of this. But just general comment, we're coming to that time again where we need to do the executive director evaluation. Okay. New business. Review proposed rule comments.
Is a basic question, Madam Chair, is how we will be looking at what we've got in you. How do you want us to respond to comments in general, in all of them, none of them? Procedurally, how do you think you would like to?
Well, I think,
and I guess I would include staff in that process too.
And I think, so I want to make sure that we acknowledge the public comments that we've got.
Right.
Even if it doesn't result in a change, I think that when people take the time to comment to us, that it's deserving of, you know, of the acknowledgement that they took that time and that we've considered. That. And so that if the documents that we have out there, I think a couple of them are just clarification. And there wasn't, I didn't see anything of like huge substance that came to us that was like a deal breaker or a gosh, we got to stop this. But Kimberly, the things that we got sent out in our packet are all of the comments.
That's correct.
And then Jason, you signed the comment on the
correct. You're in the hearing on the 3rd.
Yeah. And so we had two members of the public in attendance, and they took the opportunity to provide written testimony and speak about their comments.
Correct.
So is there anything, Jason, that you want to share with us from that meeting?
Not particularly the stuff that you've already written comments. Yeah.
So they, but Stan Martin was one of the persons that came, and he just read verbatim his written comments that we have. And Sherry was also at that, and she sort of read it loosely, you know.
She provided it.
Yep.
Yeah.
So those were the two public attendees at the public hearing?
Correct.
Okay.
The rest are all sent to us via our special email address for board changes, which we also have. We have gone through all of the comments in our office, Julie and myself and Angie. I don't have any real big concerns either that I found that, you know, there's some clarification, you know, maybe some commas and capitalization pieces. But in terms of anything substantial, I have no concerns there.
So the comments and all that kind of stuff. On the one regarding NASPA no longer approves courses, so the clause referencing the program being approved should be deleted. Have we responded to that one?
We don't respond to them, but that is something that we will respond to. We will change it.
Yeah.
Right, yeah.
Okay.
So will that clause be eliminated from the proposed rule?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. And then okay, so do we want to go through the OSCP's comments and how we're responding to that?
We can go through each comment if you want to, or members can point out any concerns they have. It just depends on however you want to do it.
So let's just, does anybody have any concerns about the comments?
Of course.
I'm just going to turn it over to you. Okay,
so, the question whether we would be potentially changing the language to remove the reference to NASBA approval of courses. There was also the one piece that was Mr. Martin calls the 8-year rule, and there is no transition period. Do we anticipate putting a transition period in?
Yeah, so I can comment to that. So the 8-year rule has always been in our rules, and then, like I said, it was inadvertently taken out, I think, in 2015. But it was still in the rules in Division 10. It was just, I think, under the public accountant license. So we have always held to that 8-year rule anyway. So we haven't deviated from that, even though it wasn't in our rule at the time. It's very rare for someone to run into the 8-year rule anymore, but it is something that we can, you know, hang our hats on if they linger too long. So there will not be a transitional period.
So not feeling it was necessary in that case. Okay. Also, then on the OSCP, there was a question, and I'm not sure I quite followed exactly because I didn't go back and read the actual proposed changes. But on the continuing education piece, where, as I gathered, the comment is the concern is we're eliminating the half hour option, but in nano learning we're allowing tenths of an hour. So I guess, are we saying that if it's not a nano class, does it have to be a full hour, or are we still going to allow even 1.1 on our regular class, even though it's not a nano class?
So we didn't eliminate the 0.5 hours. We just changed it, the whole calculation of time.
Okay.
As a general, so every course is based on a 15-minute hour, and it just goes from there. So that means for nano, that means for live, that means for group, that means for any course you take, it will be calculated on a point, on a 15-minute hour, and that's how we do it.
So a half, a 1.5 hour normal non-nano class is still out there.
Yes.
Would a half hour
yes.
be out there, whereas in the past it would not have been out there because it had to be at least an hour first before you could get the extra half hour. Isn't that correct?
Well, it used to be a long time ago.
But I'm just making sure we have not written ourselves in such a way as that we've eliminated a half hour class.
Okay. We eliminated the requirement for a minimum of a half an hour.
Right. And now so it's a tenth of an hour.
Now.
Right.
Yeah, there's okay. no mention of minimum.
Okay. And I just as a comment, that there was a question about the language where we specifically talk about an employer is considered a client for inactive status. I guess I just want to put it on the record is my belief is we had done that as a way to help indicate to our licensees that being in public accounting is not simply working for a CPA firm. That you have a client when you are working for your employer outside of a CPA firm.
And correct. And also to be consistent with the matrix for inactive licensees.
Right. So I would phrase it as there was no additional restrictions being applied at that point. It was an attempt to clarify a situation that we have run across that in many, many cases, it seems people have a misunderstanding of what public accounting is, thinking that if they're not working for a CPA firm, they're not dealing with a client, they don't have obligations, and we're trying to help clarify that they are subject to those rules.
Correct.
Okay. There was also a concern about the ethics, Oregon-only ethics class. Mm-hmm. A comment made that many general ethics classes are beneficial to a licensee based on their practice or focus. We do not, with that being stated, we do not have a rule that limits the amount of ethics that counts towards the 80 hours. So a person could take the Oregon specific class, and if there's an ethics class that's unique or special to their field of study, they can take that as well and get full credit for it. So it's not in you must take Oregon, you can't take anything else. Is that the way our rules, the language of our rules right now?
Okay. So Scott, to clarify that, so I've also got a CISA and a CFE, and I take a CFE ethics course as well that I submit during licensing, but I still have always just made it a practice to get the Oregon specific ethics. So I have more ethics.
CPE. You have more credit for
ethics. I have more ethics CPE credits being submitted than just the
minimum. Too long.
As soon as I said that, I thought, wow, that just can we scratch up? That's not what I was trying to say.
In 4040, ethics is listed as a technical subject matter category. So,
yeah. And then. The one of the last pieces is a concern about adding the Oregon specific ethics to inactives, and I guess I believe our thought was on that one again to that point of if you have an inactive license you are still practicing public you can be practicing public accounting and you are in fact subject to our rules and the profession's rules. And that the idea of having that class there mandatory for inactives to take it is again for their I would call it almost for their self-protection of understanding that the rules do apply to them when they're not working for a CPA firm and they have an inactive license. Okay.
Okay.
Well, I'm checking to see if I have other ones hanging. Right. Bear with me, please.
Anybody else have any issues? Joe?
No.
Jason?
I just wanted to shout out if you haven't been an experienced officer. Kimberly and Julie make it wonderful to do. So, it's very easy and it's an enjoyable time.
Question in the back.
Oh, sorry.
May I ask a question since we're talking about the OSCK grants?
Okay.
So I feel great comfort in that 0.5, and I understand that it's not, you can't take just 25 minutes of credit and get a 0.5 now. That would revert back to you take 50 minutes and so that you would get 1 hour, and then you, no? Oh, okay. So that you would take, let's just say you have 75 minutes, so then you get 1.5 hours. Right, so I just want to clarify that that 0.5 language is, you know, very visual in here. You know, that way people do understand that, because I was feeling like, you know, when we looked at the draft rules before where the 0.5 is crossed out, that I was feeling like it didn't speak to the availability of being able to have 1.5 or 2.5.
And so my comment on that is, I think probably because the strikeout was so visible that that's where people were focusing on, the ones that were concerned. But if you had just the language as it will be, you know, without the strikeout changes, you will see that it's, you know, every class is based on a 50-minute hour, and that's how your class will be calculated.
The reason I ask is traditionally from the point of mandatory CPE, things were only available for many, many years in one credit, no
right.
0.5. And so before we made this last change for 2017, where it allowed that 0.5, right before that, I believe there was language that allowed, you know, the 0.5 after the initial 1 hour was earned. I know that fits with the NASCA state loan standards. I just want to make sure that it's clear in the rules, you know, requesting that to alleviate any confusion by the public. Because, you know, without that, I would look at that and think, okay, hours are in a, you know, in a 50-minute increment, so that would tell me if I have the total number of minutes for the day divided by 50, that's going to give me, you know, like 4.2, and that too, I believe, and we would have done the same thing, looked at that and said, if that means it's going to be adjusted back, no fractional, you know, I mean, fractional's only in nano, not in public, and so then we would be looking at that thinking that would be only 4 hours, not 4.5, for example, in a different example. But I just want to make sure that extra 0.5 is clear, because otherwise it feels like it's back to a traditional calculation.
Thank you.
And thank you for allowing me to clarify that. I really appreciate it.
Okay. I'd like some clarification on the OSCPA's first statement on Safe Harbor. It was deleted, and I'm trying to remember why we deleted the term Safe Harbor.
It's not deleted. I mean, at the top of the division, yes, from the...
But it's still... I didn't bring that paperwork with me, so...
Everything is still there.
It's still there.
We did not touch it.
Okay.
We just took it off of the, like, heading of that division, right. Because you'll go into that Division 1 looking for... I think it's Division 1, or maybe 5, whatever it is. 5. And... when it says Safe Harbor, I was going through that rule going, well, where's the Safe Harbor? Well, it's not called that. It's under Report. And then down deep into Report is where it has the Safe Harbor language. So.
Okay. So I thought it was still there.
It's still there.
You just got rid of the title.
Yeah, I'm just.
It's just the title.
I couldn't remember what we talked about the last time.
Yes.
Okay. Any other comments, Dan? Okay. Jason, did I get you out of the way?
I had a last question. So there was one person that regarded the change in the, you know, the timely turnover of records mm-hmm. to a client. We now have a time frame there, but there was also the question of the medium in which the records are being turned over to a client. And I don't know that we really have the ability to get it fixed right now, but it is a bit of a valid point to at least consider. Mark Hugh submitted it to us on November 23rd. He says that
the client has paid for an old accountant, the prior accountant, to convert information to electronic media, appreciation schedule, balance, QuickBooks, or something like that. Then when they move to the new client, are we required to give the electronic copy to the new accountant or give them a PDF copy, which then would have to be translated into electronic media with the new accountant when the client paid for that conversion to electronic when they gave it to the first accountant?
I think the hard part there is that some things electronically are proprietary to the firm.
Right.
And so based on that, it would be hard for us to
dictate how it gets done.
I mean,
that's my initial thought too.
In general, you would hope people would make a transition easy, but it would be hard for us to dictate.
And as I said, I didn't know it was anything we could wrestle with today because there are so many tentacles that go with it.
I thought about it, but it'd be hard to.
The software you're using, the ability to export.
Even certain spreadsheets could be proprietary in nature to a firm.
Okay. That was the extent of my comments.
Okay. So now I can hear motions on nothing, or where are we at? Okay, I've moved that, right? You're giving me the thumbs up over there. Okay, are there any motions on the table here?
I make a motion to adopt the proposed changes to Division 001.
I'll second it.
And just a clarification, do
we
have to do
something in time? The reason I did that is in case some person said I don't want to adopt 7060, but I am okay with 005.
Okay. So we have a motion to adopt the changes to Division 001. We have a second. Is there further discussion? All in favor state aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
I make a motion to adopt the proposed changes to Division 005.
I'll second it.
Further discussion? All in favor state aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
I make a motion to adopt the proposed rule changes to Division 010.
I'll second that.
Further discussion? All in favor state aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
I make a motion to adopt the proposed rule changes to Division 020.
I'll second that.
Further discussion? All in favor state aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
I make a motion to adopt the proposed rule changes to Division 030.
I'll second that.
Further discussion? All in favor state aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
I make a motion to adopt the proposed rule changes to Division 040.
I'll second that.
Further discussion? All in favor state aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
I make a motion to adopt the proposed rule changes to Division 050.
I'll second that.
Further discussion? All in favor state aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Okay. All right, report from NASBET annual meeting. No item.
So I'm just going to, can I just do a quick follow-up?
Sure.
So since all these rules have just been approved, we will go to the next step and start the permanent
goal.
And hopefully they'll be, I think we're right on target for a January 1 effective date, which is
awesome. All right, good job. Okay, next item, write-off certification jury.
Well, the NASBA meeting. There is no, but I do have an update.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Scott.
So when we decided to have somebody go to the national meeting, one of the pieces was the CPA evolution piece, which was part of the NASBA meeting. And in your materials, there is a document that looks like this, because I'm going to refer to it in a moment, that talks about new modeling of I'm just going to call it a proposed model, which is what it's called right here.
Okay, can I just make a comment? Sure. We're now on item 15B.
Well, but it's tying into, correct. It's tying into it. So to give you some overview of what I thought was the pieces from the NASBA meeting, there was a lot of time spent on the CPA evolution piece. They said that they received over 2,000 comments on the exposure draft, which this board was submitted a discussion on the guiding principles and proposed plan. They did, based on that, they did modify some of it, one of the pieces that this board was concerned about, whereas in the fourth principle, there had been a piece said to increasing CPA, non-CPAs, this includes non-CPA professionals whose technology and analytic skills are critical to the performance of assurance service as well as non-accounting major students. That apparently has now been struck from the principle. That there was a lot of pushback is that you're inviting non-CPA, you're focusing more on non-CPA work than CPA work. So they modified it based on the answers. They asked for feedback on this model, which is a core in the middle, which is accounting, audit, tax, and technology, and then there's an outside rim that's business reporting, taxation, and information system. They said, what do you think of the model? And my question was, the model of what? Is it a model of the exam? Is it a model of the profession? My take back was, what do you want it to be a model of? Is their answer to me when I ask them what the model was. And they said, but this is a model. We're not saying it's anything. We want feedback on the model. So there was still a little level of...
So what are the three branches?
Tax, audit, A&A, and technology. Which... eventually sounded like it would evolve into, and I think they talk about it here, is professional engineers, where you get an initial licensure in engineering, as a PE, professional engineer, and then you have these sub-pieces, whether it's traffic engineer, civil engineer, building engineer, electrical engineer, some other pieces along the way, but they weren't, at least at that point, they weren't specifically locking it to that, nor necessarily saying that there would be a sub-exam. To get in the engineering world, you have your professional engineer, and then you take, as I understand it, you take a supplemental exam to get your electrical engineering piece.
Can I just make a comment on that? So if you look at our current CPA license right now, to get the add-on of the CFF, Certified in Financial Forensics, you have to take another exam.
Right.
Okay, so in doing this model, what they've set up to date is a CPA, through all the hoops that we've jumped through, and then if you want that added credential, you do take another, mm-hmm. you do take another exam to have that, you know, that attached. So, are they saying that this would or would not require another exam to have credential?
Nothing was set yet.
Okay.
I mean, there was a lot of discussion of that. Yeah. What does this mean? Is it a supplemental exam or an extra exam? And they said. They were very much saying this is still very fluid, but we want to get feedback on thoughts. So I don't have an answer. I don't know. When I left Boston, I don't know that they had an answer.
Yeah. And does everybody, all of the board members, does everybody understand what the... So at the NASBA meeting that Kimberly, Deanna, Stuart, were you at that one? The one in April? Okay. So the way it was presented was that there's a big push to be able to make a pathway to those that are savvy in data analytics to be CPAs. And our pushback was, hey, if you want to be an IT person, there's a slew of IT credentials out there. I have one of them. I have a CISA. Jason, you've got the CISA. If you want to go down that road, then go get that credential. But that doesn't make you a CPA. You're taking us away from what it means to be a CPA. And just because you're good at data analytics doesn't mean that you have the knowledge and skills and abilities to opine on financial statements. So there was a lot of pushback. And the argument on the other side was, as well, there's IT professionals in our firm who want to be a CPA. My pushback, my personal pushback is maybe the problem is not with the CPA license, maybe the problem is with the firms and what the firms value. So if you have a firm that only values the CPA credential but does not value the IT credential and what that brings to the table, then that's not a problem with the CPA. That's a problem with the firm and what the firm's value. Okay. So there's just some background there. But when we were there in April, it was a lot of discussion and a lot of emotion in the room regarding this topic and revamping it to and what it felt like. You're going to make the CPA exam easier, so people who really don't want to be a CPA and in the full sense of the word can find another avenue to get that credential, and you're going to dilute the value of the credential. So that was in April. So this feels like movement.
It's evolved. That's
like
another
movement.
Point I'm going to talk about.
Okay, yeah.
I this is the first time I've seen it, but reading it, I don't think it's evolved.
Well,
the way I'm reading it is a...
It's a bit... what's evolved is the bigger picture.
Or the package.
Right, right.
Or I think they reason,
the rationales and reasons for doing this.
And I'm interested to hear, because what I am reading is saying, okay, you have these four main areas, but then you get to pick one of these other three. And doesn't matter which one of these other three, you can go this way, that way, or that way, but that will get you your CPA licensure. So maybe I don't like information systems and control, so I will do the accounting, audit, tax, and tech, and go tax compliance, and I will get my CPA and won't have to touch the information.
So part of that, so there was a question, so are you basically saying that you, it was presented, it seemed to be, is that in your exam choice, as you set yourself up for the exam, you can elect to take a module that is focused on IT and take no part of the exam or very little of the exam that has to do with tax or audit. That you, there would be one piece that you could pick and choose which one you wanted to take. That being stated, they were like, maybe. But that was certainly the impression I was getting, is that the exam would evolve into a stage where there'd be certain pieces that you, everybody would take, but there would be one that you could elect to take that was more focused on IT. The person next to you would be taking the exam, and they'd be taking one more focused on audit. But that was, I mean, they were very clear to say that is not what we've adopted yet at this point, but maybe that's where we go to. That's where we go to.
Yes, and there was conversation about, well, maybe the tax piece of the pie would be easier, so people would go for that, but really end up in another, doing something different with it.
So it's still very fluid. With respect to the underlying reasons for it, because I go back even before your meeting, that you were at this past June of 2018, what I took away from is there was a need to attract the technologists and data analysts that the profession must have to do the services that that are being asked of them now. That was the driving force in June of 18. June of 19, the driving force was, yes, we're going to lose these people that are doing the work that can't become partners in a firm. So they're going to go off and lose it, and the profession will not have the ability to do that work at that point, or it will be doing it without the technology necessary to do it. That was the discussion in June. Here, at the annual meeting, it was to stay relevant. The speaker made the comments, if we don't do this, some other professional service provider will step in and we will lose our regulatory oversight. Which was almost, to the best of my knowledge, was almost a direct quote. I mean, I didn't write it down, but that's what it was. If we don't, we will lose the ability to regulate these people because some other service provider will be providing it to it. It will be outside of us.
Like lawyers and IT people want to opine on financial statements.
Perhaps.
That's the argument.
Yeah. And that there are so many people in accounting firms that are doing the work that we have, within the firm, doing the work under currently licensed CPAs, the regulatory boards, must have the ability to regulate the individuals that are doing the work underneath the licensed CPA that's signing off on the report. And to me, that's like saying, well, the medical board must admit physician assistants and nurse practitioners because they're doing so much work like doctors are. And the bar must admit legal assistance because they do a lot of the attorney work, and the attorney just signs off on it at that point. That's my take on it. So it has shifted depending on what seeming to be the pushback was. The reason for this whole project has kind of changed from when it was first presented in June of 18 to June of 19 to October of 19, the underlying premises, I interpret it, and maybe I'm biased on how I'm hearing this, but it seems to have changed a little bit as to why this is all taking place. With that being stated, they did refer to the AICPA trend report, which came out with respect to hiring trends over the last 2 years, that apparently non-accounting hires by CPA firms is up from 22% to 31%. So last year, non-CPA firms on a national basis, 31% of all new hires were non-accounting graduates. that CPA firms were hiring, and that the accounting graduates are down over 30% as a percent of who's being hired, which makes sense. We've got some change. Still at historical highs, but the number of accounting grads that accounting firms are dropping and the number of non-accounting grads that accounting firms are going up. So that's, again, a component piece of it is that the profession is hiring more now, more non-accounting grads, so maybe the exam has to be able to deal with these non-accounting grads. That was my takeaway of the CPA evolution and how it was presented to us. Kimberly would, I
we did very well. Okay. We even had to do exercises and...
It was a fruitful process, but as I say, it's kind of a shifting, evolving thing, and maybe it needs to be because the powers that be, know they need to do something, but they're not sure what they need to do. There's a question mark at the end of all of that.
There's been a lot of talk about certifications making the testing criteria easier and expanding on the experience needed before you get your certification.
Well, okay, so let me that was all on the CPA evolution. There were other things that got talked about, and one of them was the experience piece. And they said that they're considering a support for a change to the UAA to change the required minimal level of ANA work done in a rolling 5-year look back period as to whether you could assign and attest report. And they're thinking perhaps 2,000 hours over a rolling 5-year period under UAA, change of that. In order to be able to sign in a test, you would have to have enough experience in a test work over the last 5 years to do that. So that's part of what they're looking at that point. That's being evaluated and considered. That is not anything that's gotten any level of a proposal. It's not as far as advanced as seen as the CPA evolution, but that is something that's being looked at as well. They also were looking at the education, the 150-hour period. There was a NASBA task force that studied whether the 150 hours continues to be relevant and important versus going back to what had been 120 hours. And they felt that the task force study was that the result was that the 150 hours is still appropriate, that it should stay at 150 hours. But there wasn't a lot of movement within that to prescribe what the extra 30 hours would be. I mean, that's been a discussion piece, is whether we have it. It was interesting in that Ken Bishop, at one of the meetings when this came up, made the comment, basket weaving isn't all that common. And because that's what advanced applied underwater basket weaving counts as, 3 hours of your 30 hours. And without being thrown out that way, he himself said basket weaving isn't that common. So apparently they heard that from a lot of people, that basket weaving could count as the piece. But there is no prescription. They don't intend to come up with a prescription of what the extra 30 hours should be.
Well, I think they should hold to what they originally said, because I was at the meeting when they first proposed it. And the idea was to make the accountant more well-rounded,
right.
So the basket weaving makes a lot of sense. I took a scuba diving class because I work for a shipbuilding company.
Okay.
Now, anybody else, it may not seem appropriate, but it would have filled in. I never did pursue that. But the whole idea is to make you a more rounded person, because we were getting pretty much locked into a square, and we were using round holes for the square plugs that we were. And not that we needed more accounting, we needed to learn to be people.
And that was part of the conversation too, is again, the original idea was that they would be more worldly individuals and understand the world better by whatever these sources are, versus saying that you must take an extra 25 hours or 30 hours of specific debits and credits or something like this. That was part of the conversation as to why this task force was still saying 150 is appropriate, but we really don't think we should be prescribing what the 30 hours should be.
You might want to consider marriage counseling.
Well, you get a degree in that, you deal with clients, yes. They also dealt with what's known as NOCLAR, which is non-compliance with laws and regulations, which is really hot on the international level. That at the international level, and I'm going to get it wrong, but basically if you're in public accounting and you run across non-compliance with laws or regulations under international ethics, you're really obligated to report it to somebody besides your client, that you're obligated to talk to a governmental agency or whatever it might be along the way, and that, and that's at odds with what our U.S. ethics rules are and ethics standards at this point. So they're looking at that as to whether ways to deal with that is, and they've committed to being consistent between international standards and U.S. standards, which would include this NOCLAR piece. And they're looking at some pathways to deal with that. As one is to change in the UAA to allow report out, or developing an auditing standard that would require reporting out of such things to a successor auditor, so that a new auditor would know this has been a problem in the past, or the AICPA developing ethics standards that would allow for the report out. Because right now our ethics don't even allow for the report out if there's an issue that comes up. That's subject to a membership vote. So they're trying to deal with the ideas under the international ethics. There's higher standards that accountants are held to if there's non-compliance with a law or regulation than what the USA has right now.
So we're talking about non-compliance for the clientele.
Right. The client has done something that might be illegal or a violation of a regulation somewhere in their business practices, not on us. Yeah. But we run across that as our doing our work.
And currently our ethics say you step away from the client.
Well, you talk to management and determine your continuation. But, yeah, there's a process, but it doesn't go outside, in essence, of the client. Yeah. So we've talked about before, there on a national level, there's an anti-regulatory movement where more there are organizations driving the idea of reducing barriers of entry for professions and employment in general, and there are some major organizations that have been pushing that agenda, and that NASBA has joined with the Association for Responsible Professional Licensing, ARPL, to create a voice for the regulators of learned professions, such, and it's right now architects, accountants. There's it's a limited number, four
landscape
or five.
Landscape mark,
yeah. And so to have a voice in that is so that when they look at it and say, well, we want to get rid of regulation of hair weaving or cosmetology or whatever, what could be looked at as, well, why would we need to worry about that? They don't just make it so broad that it gets rid of the regulation of getting to be a CPA or an accountant or a doctor or a lawyer for that matter. So they're trying to put together a combined voice to talk to the legislatures and say that there are reasons for these, that there are levels of public protection that come from the regulation, for example, what we do, that are probably in, this certainly be the position been taken, is our regulation is much more important than the regulation of hair weavers or cosmetologists. The Oregon letter, that was a hot topic. It was probably almost a half hour presentation. The hot Oregon letter, you may remember, we got a letter from the AICPA that asked about changing our definition of inactive and what you can do, and the public practice of public accountancy and a variety of other pieces along the way. And we had provided to NASBA for their review, and they gave us a response to look at. But apparently that made its way up through the hierarchy of NASBA. And Ken Bishop, as I said, spent probably 15 minutes to 30 minutes of his hour and a half presentation talking about the Oregon letter. And it seemed to me that he started the discussion, I mean, there was a big display screen, the Oregon letter, and you're like, ooh, okay, that's us. And he started off saying, well, you know, we work really well with the AICPA, we do a really good job, everything goes fine, we share information back and forth, we trust each other to take, you know, and think. And then he went into the Oregon letter because he was not aware this had happened, and it was an indirect way of saying he felt that there had been a level of trust that had been violated at that point, that the AICPA had sent that letter without having a conversation with NASBA at first at that point. And we got a fair number of people as we sat there that from other states that popped in and said, wow, what was this letter? What did you guys say? What is your response? Why did they do it? So on and so forth, which we really didn't have any answers for at that point. But it has it has stirred, created quite a stir at the national level with Ken Bishop and with Mary Melanson. I suspect they will have or will be having direct conversations with respect to that. The event itself, it was interesting, again, perhaps a biased view, but it's the whole event itself, everything seemed to be talking about changes that we're facing, which are true, but it also seemed that it was designed changes that we're facing that make us more malleable to the idea that the CPA exam or the CPA model, licensure model, should change as well. So that it felt a little bit of a directive, you know, here's what we're going to get to you because we think you're going to be more receptive to the idea that we need to change everything along the way, which, if that's what they believe in, I don't have a problem with them doing that. If they want to influence us that way, okay, that lays out the facts. And then just another piece that I thought is if we do get to a stage of there is a licensure track somehow, some way of an IT model, we also would be needing to think about how we meet. We have a basic 7-4 competencies to be a CPA. And we basically say if you're working for an accounting firm in the A&A side, you kind of got it covered anyways. We have some specific discussion in our rules that if you're in the tax track of a CPA firm, here's how you meet those core competencies, which tend to be defined by A&A type work, a test work, that we would also need to do the same thing is, okay, if you're going to get your CPA through the IT track, to use that as a phrase, how do you meet those 7 core competencies within the IT services that you're providing? So that is down the road, but that would be another place that we would look at it that say, okay, well, we have the qualification committee for those who go through industry and business. We have the specific OARs, how do you get it if you're working in tax. We have the OARs and the definitions of how you do it through an A&A, but we would ultimately have to come up with a process of how do you get to core competencies through the IT process as well. So it's still another backstop besides simply saying you get the licensure, that you can sit for the exam and you're eligible for the licensure. We at the state level of Oregon certainly would then have to develop rules how to, if we buy into that, how do you get it by way of meeting the 7 core competencies that are the underpinning of our licensure model. That's my summation of the Boston meeting.
About as long as the time you
did. There was a lot going on there.
I've been to 2 national meetings. This was by far the better of the 2.
Yeah.
I mean, there were substantive issues dealt with versus just kind of the business of running NASBA. Right. There were meat and potatoes to deal with.
There was.
Good. Any questions or comments from the board members?
Sounds like interesting times coming up.
Yeah.
Times, they are changing.
Okay. Next on the agenda is the write-off certification.
So you approved a write-off for Mr. McReynolds previously. However, we didn't quite have the amount right. So this is not replacing the other one, this is in addition to the one you did. So we'll have that in the policy to sign. He has passed away. Mm-hmm. He was never a licensee.
Does that require any action on our part, or is it just informative?
I think, it's not the right policy.
Yeah, and we'll just have Nancy sign it.
Okay. Next item, we've already done the office list review of meeting attendance for boards and committees.
So, each end of the year, we provide the board a list of participation in board and committee meetings. The purpose for this is to make sure that the committee members that we have are adequately participating in the committees and doing a job. And so here are the results of that.
So in terms of people that are on committees, as far as if somebody has a bad record, mm-hmm. does the committee chair remove them? Do we make recommendations or what?
Recommendations to
remove this person? If that decision is made by the committee chair, I mean, what's our involvement in that process? Because there's a couple of people here that look like they've missed like the last three meetings, for example, of the qualification committee.
So, as I understand it, Haley Fish has already resigned from the committee.
Okay.
Right?
Yes, I can see you. Yes, you should.
So, and there's actually quite a few that we need to replace in the QC committee, so I need to work on that badly. Julie, who else? So I know Haley resigned from the committee. Is Michael Smith still on there? Yes.
So the X's are they're in attendance. The absence obviously works, just to be clear.
Mm-hmm. Casey's moving to Mississippi.
She's in Texas now, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's not sure if she'll be able to continue beyond August when she is going for tenure at a new college. So, okay. We'll be sorry to see her go. But.
Right.
So what do we have?
Because that to me is a conflict.
I don't know. That's maybe something else.
Okay. Just a quick question. Do the colors matter as I'm looking at this? Like for my attendance? I wasn't on the board in January.
No, February. There should be like a blackout or something.
Yeah, it's grayed out because you... It's not gray. It's actually the same color as the rest of the year. That's why I'm asking. That's my fault. I was compiling these quickly. So.
No worries.
Now you...
Well, that's not an excuse for not being here.
I know. Oh, crystal ball just wasn't working.
Each committee coordinator prepared their own, mm-hmm. and then at the last minute, we were like, they look so different, mm-hmm. that we'd really like them to be consistent. So it's just my mistake there.
No, it's just a number, though. Just wanted to make sure from a color standpoint.
No, you're fine. You were there.
No, I was. Not in January, February.
I think you'd really just move down because it's a gray bar below mine.
Yes, because we have a different, yes.
What's up with that? At least there's three of us. That was perfect to pair us.
There you go.
I can't recall how many years.
It's normally about right here on my screen.
Sure.
We tell the chairs to throw you off.
So just looking back at the procedures for the committees that we put together, and this is the first year we've done it, so that's like, you know, it's a new process. But basically what we were looking at doing is that, like, if you have two unexcused absences, that's your notice of resignation. So an excused, or basically what that sort of looks like is they need to email Kim and ask him if they can, and you know, if they don't do that, basically they're not showing up, was kind of like the rationale behind that. Sort of, and it sounds like you already had some of the sort of design over that situation. And then, or I don't know if that's the specific reason, but anyhow, then in addition, like prior to the last board meeting, the calendar, the executive director and committee chair will review the attendance and participation of each committee member. And upon review, the executive director and the committee chair will provide the board with a recommendation regarding which committee members will remain on the committee for the following calendar year. So basically at that point they could say, you know, like, we don't think this person is fitting or whatever, if they want to make a recommendation to somebody. So it would be sort of like in the opposite, right? Like if there was somebody on there they didn't want, they could then say. So we can, prior to the next board meeting, touch base and just, or do you think everything else is good for right now?
Well, technically, there's committee meetings for the next board meeting. So, if there should be a change, wouldn't it be best now
to wait? Well, no. So, the point of it was that if there was concerns or whatever, that they could be brought before the board to remove them from the next calendar year. This is our last meeting.
Correct. And we meet on January 30th next, it appears.
Right.
And there are committee meetings that will start the 20 year before we meet as a board.
Right.
So in, if the world were perfect, we would make recommend it. But I guess as a question, so it's in theory, the there are to be recommendations to us.
Right.
As
you guys wouldn't necessarily, other than like
this report
attendance,
right.
You wouldn't know if there was concerns on other levels.
But at this point, there are no recommendations of changes. Is that a fair statement?
That is correct.
So this is information only.
I think some of the concern has remedied itself. On one committee,
yes.
there's just one possible other one that might be an issue.
Okay. I said, as much as anything, I was trying to frame what it is that we today do or don't need to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sorry, I wasn't as prepared on this piece as I should have been.
Are you looking at the same committee when you say there's another one?
No.
Okay.
So,
we have the option of, it's at any time the board can remove someone. So, we can always revisit this if necessary at the following board meeting.
We also, I thought when we were going to be doing this, we're going to sort of track people who consistently recuse themselves from votes, because when they recuse all the time, then
it becomes a problem.
It becomes a problem. So, not just participating in the meeting, but actually being able to vote consistently. So
it should be another tab maybe we add in.
Okay. So maybe bring this back in January with a little fresh start. Even though it's the beginning of the year and not the end of the year. Or if there seems to be no problems, we can just carry on.
So do we have a discussion about the one?
Yes.
Okay. So next on the agenda is old business. We already talked about the CPA evolution. The other one is the adoption of the 2020 meeting calendar. Is it something we need to vote on, or is it just this is our calendar? Is there I didn't hear
we
any
need to
issues?
Approve.
Yeah. Okay.
One of them changed. One of the dates changed.
Yeah. The
September meeting.
Yes, I think we need to approve those dates.
Yeah, and it seemed to me I had two different pieces. Which one is which? Yeah.
No, I didn't
see it. I think this is.
I still wouldn't know even if you gave
the January date is the one that was switched between February and January. That was the concern, I believe.
For the board meeting.
Yeah.
So the one I'm looking at right now is January 30th.
That's the
one you want to move to.
Oh.
Well,
I thought you didn't like the January date. That's where we changed it to February.
I don't know that I had a problem with it.
Oh,
any date.
A stickable thing.
Yeah.
Well, that's a Sunday.
Yeah.
I mean, in the past, we had worries about whether we do a Sunday meeting. Yeah. But
we don't do this anymore.
Okay.
January 30th is a Sunday?
No.
What's the next one?
I think the dates that changed were we had a BOAC that was falling in September, or there was something
right,
about September 15th.
That's
right.
There were
at one point a qualification meeting on April 15th, if I remember correctly.
Correct.
But again, this thing's.
Well.
I guess my question is, it's moved so much. Which one are we in fact looking at to approve? Is that
this is the most recent one that says. Yes,
amended
December
19th.
Yep,
okay.
That's the most. And the qualifications committee also reviewed those and asked for two dates of theirs to be moved before you approved.
Okay.
So those are reflected in this.
Okay. I make a motion to adopt the proposed 2020 schedule as presented to us.
Okay. I'll second it.
All right. Any further discussion? All in favor state aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? All right. Passed.
With that, with that, liaisons to the committees, now that we know the dates.
Okay. So why don't we put that on the agenda for our next meeting, is to everyone review the list of the dates and figure out what subcommittees that they can be on.
So in the meantime, for those committee meetings that happen before the next board meeting, there's a carryover of the liaisons?
Yes. Okay, qualifications committee.
Yes.
Stu.
You had a good meeting. Well done by phone. Except for myself, I showed up here at the office, which is nicer to deal with. There's been a lot of pressure, I guess, from the board to try and get people to come in, because it's really hard to do evaluations, mm-hmm. everybody separated to their own telephone. So I'm hoping that the board will kind of lean on that a little bit, because it's really important. Most people have a hard job, I think harder than most, probably right close to the complaints committee people. There's a lot of material to review, a lot of interviewing to be done, and we now currently only have 7 members, and we've had as many, I think, as 11 at one point. It takes a long time to train people to be qualified to be reviewers. It's not something you just step into. I can speak for myself. I'm reading and going way over my head. Thankfully, I've got good committee people that have done their homework on these things. But it's really important, because we've now rejected one person a second time because they didn't quite live up to what was supposed to be happening. And that's good. That means they're not just pushing through.
Yeah, it's not perfunctory.
And it's a good committee, but it needs some support from the board, and I think more sooner than later, as far as getting some new people, because the training time needs to take place, and they will be mentored, I understand, from existing members, so that I think it's kind of important we do it as soon as we can.
Okay, so can you talk a little bit more about what you mean by board support? Is it just
support just getting people off the list to get onto the committee?
Okay, appointing
recruitment.
Yeah. Okay. Is there anything else?
Beyond
the recruitment or
no, just the fact they're getting lean,
okay.
as far as
yes.
people, and
okay.
I'm impressed with the depth at which they go to on their research. It's not just a kiss me and go on.
Mm-hmm. Not a scam.
No.
Okay. And so, okay. All right. Anything else, Stu?
No, that was my report from the vice chair.
Okay. Great. All right. Ratification request.
I make a motion to ratify the tentative license, CPA licenses and permits issued to the individuals provided to us in item 17A.
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor state aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed?
I make a motion to ratify the firm registrations tentatively issued by staff to the firms presented to us and attachment item 17B.
I'll second it.
Any discussion? All in favor state aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed?
I make a motion to ratify the admittance to the municipal roster by staff of the individuals presented to us in agenda item attachment 17C.
I'll second that.
Any discussion? All in favor state aye.
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 Those opposed? Okay, and if you can turn back now.
I'm going to go back into executive session.
So we are going to resume back into.
Can I take a quick break?
Yes, we will. So let's just, I'm going to close the public hearing, other than to say that the public. Do we have to
we're
come
not,
back?
We have to come back.
You have to come back,
yeah.
And then, okay. So we're going to take a break from the public session, take a small break, and resume back into executive session. So let's take 5 minutes.